This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And, you know, one of the things we do here on Intelligent Medicine is we try to look for auspicious nutrients, nutrients that, you know, maybe are a little less well known, that may eventually become mainstream nutrients that really have the potential to revolutionize our way of treating common conditions. And I think we have one in today's subject. We're going to talk about something called SPMs. Some of you may have heard about SPMs. Some of you have not. So much the better if you haven't, because we're going to provide you with a comprehensive introduction to the healing potential of SPMs with today's guest. She's an expert on the subject. She's Georgia Austin. I know Georgia because Georgia and I served together with the American Nutrition Association as part of something called the BCNS, the Board for Certifying Nutrition Specialists. Both of us are CNSs. We're certified nutrition specialists, and we help to formulate the exams that are necessary for certification as part of that process. It's a very exciting endeavor because we aim to professionalize the field of nutrition. She also is a possessor of a master's degree in the field of nutrition. She's a CCN, which is a credential that's required to become a professional nutritionist in New York. And she has years of experience in the field of nutrition. She also is a product specialist trainer for Metagenics. That's a health sciences research company, also the sole distributor of SPM as a product. So without further ado, welcome, George. It's a pleasure having you on the program.
Well, thank you, Ron. I really appreciate you having me on your program.
Yeah, and how this came about is, you know, we were at a meeting together and, you know, I said, you know, what are you up to? What are you doing these days? And she said that she was really doing a lot of work on the subject of SPM. And I said, wow, that sounds like a great opportunity to talk about something brand new in our program. So here we are.
That's right.
So so first of all, you know, help us with some definitions. You know, what are SPMs? And sometimes I get it wrong. I think it's specific pro-inflammatory mediators, to have it right?
Close, close.
Okay.
The S stands for specialized.
Oh, specialized, okay.
But it is, yeah,
specialized
pro-resolving mediators.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, you know our industry, it's a bunch of alphabet soup anyway, so.
Okay, so let's say that again slowly.
Sure. Specialized pro-resolving mediators.
Well, I like that thing about resolving, because kind of that makes it sound panacea-like. I like things that resolve things. So explain how that's possible with SPMs.
Sure, sure. So first of all, to understand that, you have to understand what are we resolving? Well, we're trying to resolve inflammation, right? A lot of us have heard of that word inflammation. Inflammaging is another term to describe how inflammation and that process can age us prematurely. So when we have an inflammatory response from either an injury or an infection or surgery or even a heavy workout, then we have what's called the initiation phase. That's a normal, healthy immune response to some sort of insult, right? So that initiation phase can create redness, pain, swelling, and heat in the area. Say you sprained your ankle, right? Picture your ankle and it's sprained. But where resolution comes in is in a healthy system, that we can resolve that injury. We can create, you know, the swelling goes down, the pain and the redness and the heat starts to go down after a few days. And then our body should be able to naturally start to, you know, have an ebb and flow of that inflammatory process and start to begin rebuilding this tissue, right? So sending in all the cells, you know, the analogy I like to use is really you have your first responders, right? Think of Hurricane Sandy and all the things that happened. It's very relevant for where you are in New York. All of the things that happened. So those first responders are coming in. They're, you know, putting out the fires. They're managing, you know, anyone that's looting. They're picking them up and throwing them in jail. They're just doing what needs to be done to prevent total catastrophe, right? But then you want that cleanup crew to come in and to be able to remove all the sand that washed up on the beach and to remove all of the dangerous, you know, buildings, tear down the buildings that are going to fall on somebody, and really make sure that then the contractors can come in and rebuild, right? So that's what resolution phase should do. And if we're healthy, we can do that. But when we're not healthy, we have chronic unresolved inflammation that translates to chronic disease.
So it's like a vicious cycle that's self-perpetuating, that, you know, may have had an appropriate instigator. It may have been a food reaction, as in celiac disease, for example, or infection, you know, something triggered it, but, and the body should respond. Okay, you know, we need to defend ourselves from invaders, but then it just kind of becomes
keeps going.
Like, yeah, vicious cycle and kind of like a Chernobyl-like meltdown, you know.
Well, this is really what my passion is and what inspired me to get into the nutrition industry from environmental biochemistry is my own inflammatory crisis. And I wanted to understand.
Share with us.
How does this happen? So how does this happen? How does a healthy 30-year-old develop something that looks like autoimmune, inflammatory, roving joint inflammation that was debilitating? So that began my mission to figure out how lifestyle and diet and environment and then nutrients can affect this process. So, you know, the discovery of SPMs and the research, groundbreaking research, really appealed to me on that level because it was like, you know, oh, here's the next piece.
Well, they're a category of nutrients. And actually, I didn't know about this until a couple of years ago. They're called resolvins.
That's one category. There are others called protectins. That sounds nice too, right? Protectins, mirorrhizins, neuroprotectins. Those all sound like really good things to have.
Right.
And they are. They are. They should be produced from our white blood cells, from the omega-3s called EPA and DHA that should be in our tissues.
Indeed. And those are among our real standbys for anti-inflammatory effects in nutritional science. So, you know, we want people to take high doses of EPA and DHA for a wide variety of conditions, you know, that are inflammatory, for certainly rheumatoid arthritis, for neurodegenerative diseases that we now have an inflammatory basis, and, you know, on and on it goes. Every itis in the body is actually an inflammatory problem. Think of all the itises that we have. This
that's
is actually
exactly.
fairly recent science, right?
Around 2000, a researcher named Dr. Charles Sirhan actually published his first work in 2000, but he had been working on that for years before that. So it's been going on for 20-some years. That was the early studies, and then Dr. Jasmandali really had the next wave of studies, like, all right, we know what these are, we've identified them. Now, how do they help? What do they do when you give them orally? We know the body should make them, but how does it translate to putting them into a supplement and giving them orally?
Right.
And they were able to prove that they work.
An example of which is glutathione. We know that glutathione is a beneficial thing, but there's a lot of controversy about whether just giving oral glutathione is going to get to the tissue. Some believe that it needs to be synthesized within the body.
Mm-hmm.
So you might give the building blocks like NAC or, you know, glutamine. These are ways of stoking glutathione production.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that resolvins are important, it does not necessarily imply that you can just take them by mouth as a nutritional supplement and that they'll have effectiveness, right?
Correct. That was the hypothesis that they were able to prove. In his research, he actually found that, yes, giving them orally does increase the amount of SPMs in the blood within 2 hours. It increases all categories. And that translated to the ability of the immune cells to engulf or phagocytize pathogens and other infectious agents like Staph aureus, Staphylococcus aureus, right? So it improved the ability of immune cells. It doesn't block the ability of the immune cells to work.
Right, because if it interferes with inflammation, you might say, well, you know, like taking steroids, mm-hmm. for example, we know that that's a two-edged sword because, you know, you might think, well, all these people with coronavirus, you know, just give them steroids and they'll all survive. Well, the problem is you'll reduce the inflammation, but you'll also reduce the immune response and then the people succumb to the pathogen. So you don't want to damp down the immune response. It seems that resolvins and, you know, SPMs don't do that.
No, they don't. And all of this research, preclinical, you know, which is done in, in petri dishes and then in mouse model, that's why Dr. Serhan was actually nominated for the Nobel Prize in Medicine and Physiology a few years ago. Didn't win.
Okay. Well,
but he was nominated. So that's pretty, that's how hot of a topic it is.
Indeed. Okay, so the argument might be EPA and DHA generate these compounds. So, you know, why not just feed people a lot of EPA and DHA, you know, if they have inflammatory conditions? Why bother to give them a separate and distinct supplement that focuses on this resolvin activity?
Great question. And that is actually what we always used to do.
Yeah.
Is we would give people with itises, like you said, that's the way I refer to them too. We would give them megadoses between 4 to 10 grams. So the amount of capsules or teaspoons or tablespoons of liquids can be overwhelming. You get pill fatigue.
GI problems. Yeah. You know, there's a limit to how much you can take. Yeah.
Exactly. So the problem comes in is that even when we're healthy, we're young and we're healthy, we have only about 5% conversion from EPA and DHA into these various SPMs, right? Once you start to see the aging process, that's part of that initial work that Dr. Serhan and associates did, is they saw that, you know, younger mice versus older mice had more SPMs. And then when you initiate inflammation in an older mouse, like a human, you see an even further drop in SPMs. And so once you have someone, and they see this in humans too, once you have someone who's older and has chronic disease, in human models, they've shown that both obese and patients with metabolic syndrome both have a compromised ability to convert omega-3s, those EPA and DHA compounds from fish oil or algae or from their foods,
so
right?
So the very people who SPMs. Need this conversion are least likely to accomplish this conversion. It requires
Correct.
A healthy metabolism and a relative freedom from inflammatory burden.
Yeah, absolutely. It's much like the conversion. It's a two-step conversion from omega-3s from, say, walnuts and flax seeds and you know, healthy foods. You have to convert omega-3s into EPA and DHA if, for instance, you don't eat fish or you don't take fish oil. It's very similar to that some people have poor conversion of EPA and DHA into those SPMs. Yes.
What about heavy exercise? Because there's, you know, one of the limits to athleticism is, you know, the aches and pains that you suffer, particularly as you get a little less, older.
Sure.
That is heavy exercise something that blocks the conversion of EPA and DHA to these beneficial compounds?
Yeah, that is actually another area of concern, is that because you are creating micro injury when you're exercising, right? That's an initiation phase, and mm-hmm. your initiation phase inflammatory response may outpace the amount of SPMs that you can produce. So yes, mm-hmm. heavy exercise and also toxic exposure mm-hmm. has been shown to interfere with the conversion, as well as certain medications like NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories.
Mm. I see. So in an effort to quell inflammation, you may block mm-hmm. the body's own mechanism for resolving inflammation.
That's correct. So wow. although they're very effective at blocking the pain signals, they block enzymes called COX enzymes, cyclooxygenase, mm-hmm. that converts omega-6s into pain-causing chemicals like prostaglandins, mm-hmm. prostaglandin E2, right? So when you get that conversion blocked, it's very effective. But the problem is you become what's called resolution toxic, because those same COX enzymes are also needed to convert EPA and DHA into SPMs.
Wow.
So that is why many of the side effects linked to chronic use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories exist.
Wow. Yeah. And side effects such as, renal damage,
yep.
Cardiovascular toxicity,
GI bleed.
Yeah.
Yep. GI bleed and poor healing of connective tissue and joint tissue. That's been shown time and time again by chronic users. And, we used to be told by exercise magazines, if you're doing a heavy workout, take some Advil the night before.
Yeah.
It's crazy talk now once we know this.
Yeah. The chronic use of those things is just horrible. I mean, for occasional, you have an injury or something like that, I try to.
Sure.
I think, I may have gone through a 30 count bottle of them in the last couple of decades. That may be it for me.
Correct.
So full disclosure, I take SPMs. It's a product.
Great.
It's available. Metagenics makes it. They have, I believe, an exclusive distributorship on that, because I don't see it mm-hmm. made by any other companies. I get it on FullScript, which is our online mm-hmm. Supplement access. But I also take fish oil. So I'm hedging my bets here. I'm getting older, feel a little, stiff in the morning. I do a lot of exercise. There's some soreness. Mm-hmm. I want to protect my brain. I want to protect my blood vessels. So I've included an SPM in my regimen of about, 35 different things that I take.
Sounds familiar.
Can I just chuck my fish oil?
No, of course, we still need, you only convert 5% of fish oils into SPM. So what's the other 95% of the fish oils or the EPA and DHA that you take in? You need it for cell membrane. So the construction of your cell membrane and your nuclear membrane, where your book of life is stored in the DNA in there, mm-hmm. and all of the organelles within the cell also need those particular compounds. Plus, they have other less inflammatory compounds that they make, not just SPMs. So there are a multitude of reasons, hence why you see over 20,000 studies on the human benefits of fish oils. So definitely not, but maybe you don't need to take as much, right? If you give those intermediate steps to help your body resolve inflammation.
Right. I can't be bothered to take that much fish oil. I don't have really serious inflammatory problems. So I take, two big honking, 1,200 milligram fish oil capsules daily. And then I take one SPM twice daily. And the nice thing about SPM, very small. They're like really kind of tiny capsules.
So like you vitamin E size.
Right.
Yeah.
But am I deluding myself that just a couple a day is going to do the job? They seem so small. I wonder, is there enough to help ordinary inflammation? I might give more to a patient with a serious inflammatory problem, but for an ordinary, preventive purposes, mm-hmm. one twice daily, is that adequate, you think?
That is, that's considered a maintenance dose, yes. Mm-hmm. It's 500 milligrams, and it's standardized to the level of activity, resolving activity, which is really interesting. It's not just, here you go, here's this amount of SPMs. No, it's actually calibrated to the resolving activity. So mm-hmm. two a day is considered maintenance for healthy people, because we're all aging. Let's face it.
Right.
And life is inflammatory. What you can do for either acute dosing for someone who is healthy or for, you know, acute intervention for a chronic patient is you give it at a higher dose, right? Mm-hmm. So you can do 2 twice a day, or for some people, I've done 3 twice a day for, you know, it depends on how severe the pain, the inflammatory markers might be that you see in the blood, and their size, right? If they have more cells, they're going to need more SPMs.
Right. A larger individual might require.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Are there human trials in this? Have we looked
Absolutely.
At SPMs? Because, you know, a lot of things, I mean, sound very mm-hmm. plausible. You know, you outline the biochemistry, you could become a candidate for the Nobel Prize, but, you know, maybe that's in, mm-hmm. you know, simpler animals, mice and rats and so on.
Sure. Well, that's always where research starts, right? We want to make sure we're thinking the right direction, that our theory is playing out. And so all research starts that way. It starts in a petri dish, then it goes to an animal model, then it goes to human models. So some of the need for SPMs has been established by human research. So there's need for it demonstrated, and then there's therapeutic human clinical prospective studies, right? So looking at retrospective studies is looking back and saying, huh, how much, you know, how much SPMs does this type of patient make versus healthy? So for instance, Alzheimer's disease patients postmortem after they die, mm-hmm. their brains have been shown to have less SPMs mm-hmm. and the SPM levels were correlated to cognitive function scores, meaning
wow.
the higher the SPM levels that they had in their tissue correlated to better cognitive function scores, right?
Wow.
For Alzheimer's and MCI, mild cognitive impairment.
You mean if
so
I take a whole 30-count bottle, I'll have an IQ of 300?
Hey, you never know.
Okay.
A lot of other factors there, but yeah.
All right. Those are studies that suggest the plausibility, because mm-hmm. if you have low levels, fine. Are there any intervention studies in some of these inflammatory conditions showing? I mean, I know it's kind of relatively, the science is relatively in its infancy,
mm-hmm.
but are any clinical trials, double-blind placebo-controlled trials, for example, that show there's some efficacy?
Well, so it's early on yet. So there are a lot of clinical case series that show improvement in certain conditions. For instance, the very first generation trial was done on a group of patients with various inflammatory joint conditions. So mm-hmm. OA, osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, even I believe there was ankylosing spondylitis. And they actually measured not only pain scores, but they were looking for inflammatory markers in their blood, and they were looking for changes at 4 weeks and 8 weeks, right? And so they did see that. They saw decreases in hSCRP, which is that's an inflammatory
yes.
marker that would be measured.
By the way, you sent me a very nice mm-hmm. study that shows that you can lower CRP, mm-hmm. which for our
yep.
listening audience, C-reactive protein is one of mm-hmm. our best blood markers, easily attainable. You can mm-hmm. get it for parts of routine blood test
mm-hmm.
That measures your level of inflammation.
Yeah, they measured several things.
Indeed.
It's one of them. That's a very commonly measured, considered an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease, too.
Yeah, especially the subtype of CRP called mm-hmm. you know, cardiac CRP or highly sensitive CRP.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That is actually, you know, among our risk factors when we look at, you know, cholesterol and HDL mm-hmm. and particle size and homocysteine and Lp(a). You also look at hsCRP. And if we can lower
yeah.
that mm-hmm. seems to be a key risk factor for cardiovascular disease. It may explain why
sure.
some people with high cholesterol or low CRP seem to avoid getting cardiovascular problems.
Correct. Yeah, these patients that are inflammatory, that is one of the risk factors. And so they were able to show a decrease in the hsCRP, that prostaglandin E2, another common inflammatory marker, and fibrinogen, which is mm-hmm. inflammation related to how blood clots and excessive clotting can be linked to elevated fibrinogen. So again, a cardiovascular risk. So not only did their pain scores get better, but they had reduced blood markers of inflammation, particularly related to risk for cardiovascular disease. So that was a pretty significant first-round clinical trial.
Well, that's great. Look, we're going to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. But in part
sure.
two, Georgia, you're a clinician, so you know mm-hmm. you also kind of know where the rubber meets the road in your own practice of seeing patients. In addition to being a theoretician and you know learning the science, maybe you can share with us you know some of the situations where SPM might be applicable and what your experience has been. We'll do that in part two. Okay. Our subject today: SPMs. Say it. It's specialized
pro-resolving mediators.
Okay, that's a mouthful. We'll stick to SPMs. Mm-hmm. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.